say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be. You need
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and I gotta tell you something, folks. Have you ever climbed Mount Everest? Probably most of you have not, okay? I'm just going to take that for granted that you have not. Have you tried to start a business? Well, I'm going to take it again that most of you maybe have not, or maybe some of you have. Have you ever wanted to start a new business? The chances are the answer is yes. Can I tell you what I have for you today? I have the woman that can help you understand how to do both. First, climb Mount Everest, but more importantly, help you ascend your startup. Oh, Helen Yu is brilliant. The book is outstanding. I've read it twice. I've got 41 pages of notes. She's going to be here for a week, and we're going to just not let her go because it's just that good. You're going to love her. You're going to love the book. But before we get started with her, let's do what we do every week, right? And that is I walk you through the four areas of your life. Here's the deal. We are four-part people, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. Right? And we should be in training all the time. Matter of fact, Helen will tell you that there's no way you can really train to climb Mount Everest physically because it's really more than a physical thing. It is physical, but it's mental. It's emotional. It is spiritual. And for her journey, it was especially spiritual. Oh, we're going to talk about that, right? But here's the thing. You need to be in training every day when it comes to the physical, mental, and emotional, spiritual. Right? And so we're going to rank ourselves how we did the last 7 days or so in these four areas. How do we do that? So in a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I'm not very good, 10 being I could not be any better, I want you to rank yourself physically. And what I mean is, how's your exercise? Are you eating right? Right? Putting the right fuel into your body? Are you drinking enough water, getting enough sleep? Those type of things. If you were to rank yourself on just those four things on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank yourself? Right? 5 being average. Right? That's your first number. Your second number is your mental number. What does mental training look like? Well, mental training is taking an active position in trying to grow in your knowledge and your understanding. Maybe it's growing in your knowledge and understanding of your business. Maybe it's growing in your knowledge and understanding of your relationships. Maybe it's growing in expanding your brain and just understanding how people work. Maybe it's, as Helen Yu says in chapter 5, maybe it's acclimating to your customer. Think about that, right? What would you give yourself on that scale of 1 to 5? I'll tell you, here's an active way to increase your mental number. Read a book like this one. This would be a great book to read to increase your mental. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 5 being average, what would you say your mental training is? All right? So you got two numbers. Third number is your emotional training. And look, we're in emotional training every day. Whether you believe it or not, we have been in a pandemic, and being in a pandemic really plays with your emotions. Matter of fact, one of the things that Helen says in her book when she was climbing Mount Everest, it was fighting that emotion of not wanting to quit. It was fighting that, watching everyone around her who was supposed to go with her on this journey drop away, and yet she had to keep going. That's an emotional thing, right? It's partially an emotional thing. So we look at two things here. One is, how well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure? And then the second thing is, how well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of others? Right? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself on those two things? 5 being average. Okay, so now you have three numbers. The fourth number is the spiritual number. And a lot of people don't think that they're spiritual, but we're all spiritual. Matter of fact, I think what Helen would tell you, and she probably will, that it was very much a spiritual journey because she fulfilled a promise to her grandmother and she had to have a lot of faith. She had to have a sense of purpose. She had to have a why, which goes way beyond our brain and our emotions. It's something very much deeper that you have to believe in, that the spirit of who you are has to go on, right? And sometimes for people, you know, that can be God, it can be nature, it could be anything that we believe that can bring us to a center, place of center, a place of peace, a place of joy in the midst of chaos. For some people, it's yoga, right? It could be anything. There's two questions. How's it working out for you? What do you need to change it? And how can you help it grow? I guess that's three. And so, you know, what would you give yourself a number on that area of spiritual? That are four areas. Those are four numbers. Those four numbers are like the legs of the chair. If those four numbers are off or out of balance, right? When you sit in a chair and you sit in an unbalanced chair, what happens? Your posture goes bad, which means that everything else will go bad. At the same time, if your legs of your chair are too low, you can't sit at the right table to eat nutritiously. And speaking of someone who has her legs all at the right height, and she's got them all right there where they should be, her name is Helen Yu. She is the founder and CEO of Tegan Advisory, driving growth for tech companies from startups to startup CEOs who go on to achieve multi-billion dollar revenue growth and record profitability, to global titans like Oracle and Adobe. I think you've heard of those, right? She's a board advisor to fast growth software as a service companies and is on the board of the Global Cybersecurity Association. She's a top Twitter influencer with a 10 million plus weekly reach and was ranked a top 10 thought leader by Thinkers360 and a top 10 digital transformation influencer by IBM. She spoke at South by Southwest, Tycon, DMS, Money 2020. She's an avid adventurer who trekked to Mount Everest Base Camp, which we've already talked about, and Ice Climb Glaciers. Her new book, which is Ascend Your Startup, has been a Wall Street Journal bestseller. She is awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome for the first time to A New Direction, Helen Yu. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you, Jay, for such a warm introduction. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I got to tell you something. It's an honor to have you here. This book is outstanding. I loved every minute of it. And I want to just kind of give people an idea of something that you said in the book. You say, and this is an introduction, you said this book explores those disconnects, and not only that, but the dozens of micro decisions that must be made along the way in order to scale without sacrificing yourself, the people you love, and the company you're passionate about. And you overlay this with a 14-day expedition to reach Mount Everest Base Camp in the North Col in Tibet, which is 17,000 feet above sea level. And this is the metaphor for the journey. I think what I want people to know is why that moment, why did you, I want them to hear the story about why you wanted them, why you wanted to climb, or why you felt you needed to climb Mount Everest.
Yeah, the why behind ascending Mount Everest, first of all, was to keep a sacred promise to my grandmother, and was to leave her ashes, as a matter of fact, on the tall mountain. I felt unstoppable. I made up my mind that nothing would hold me back from my climb. Right? My destination started out not on any map, but in my mind. So making this the decision to write Ascending Your Startup was no different. I felt it was yet another way to honor the grit and resilience my grandmother taught growing up in a small, you know, province, and then honor the grit and resilience it takes to scale a startup.
Mm. Yeah, one of the things you say is, and because I know you're so acquainted with the startups, is that you say, and it's kind of funny, you said, I haven't found a single person who doesn't want to grow faster. 90% of startups fail because they don't see their growth disconnects. And I found that to be interesting that we somehow get so caught up into wanting to grow our company that we don't see the disconnects, do we?
Oftentimes, no, right? If you think about, let's start with the definition of startup, right? When we talk about startups, really it means a temporary organization looking for repeatable business model, right? That's the difference, right? That means they have to find something repeatable in order to scale. Then every single startup, they go through three main stages, right? The first stage is turn idea into a product. During that stage, this is when you have to, as a founder, have to crystallize what problem your product solves, for whom and why. Then you also need to figure out what kind of company you want to build by mapping out your culture, value, and brand. Then you move to the second phase. That's where move product to market. So this is where you need to define the minimum viable product, minimum viable team, minimum viable go-to-market, and move you upward and onward, then go from market to scale. this is where you figure out what your minimum viable repeatability is and build an engine to drive repeatable sales. So unfortunately, as founders, you may know the product super well, but you don't know how to organize the company to scale, or you don't know where to hire the people with the right level of experience. You don't know where to find your Sherpa as you climb a mountain.
Right.
So you have to talk to people who've been there, done that. And then you oftentimes, as human, we all have blind spot. This is where I define the five disconnects along the three main phases as you go through them. And then, you know, it's very, very critical as you think about the one common thing to all founders is the path of complex decisions that must be made in order to survive and scale. So this is why asking, you know, you can go Google anything you want to do a pitch deck, you can go find the answer. But my book is about what questions to ask as you go through these phase of growth, right? If you know what questions to ask, then you can always find the answer to the questions, right? The challenge I've had or others that through the five conversations I've had with founders is, you know, they really don't know when to ask what question. So having a decision framework will help them, hopefully.
This is what I loved about your book, because you talk about these micro decisions, and there's a series of micro decisions and that we have to make along the way. And they are, I'm just telling you, folks, these micro decisions that she brings up are so thought-provoking and will apply to any business there. And we're going to talk through some of them. But I want to talk to one of the reasons that something that your grandmother said to you, because I found this so powerful. And I want people to know the power of something that your grandmother gave you, because you were the only girl. You were raised predominantly by your grandmother, along with other cousins. And your grandmother's final request, you said, my grandmother's final request to me before she passed away was this: stay special, make the world proud, and spread my ashes on a tall mountain. I promised her I would, and this climbing Mount Everest became your final act of doing so. And what a beautiful thing that your grandmother gave you. I just found it so powerful to stay special, make the world proud. And then the last thing was for her, just take my ashes to the tallest mountain. And that really gave you a why, didn't it?
Absolutely, Jay. And that actually spirit, you know, really carried me forward in all sorts of challenges that went through personally and in business world. She is with me. She is with me every single day. Right, I carry her picture with me wherever I go. And so that's why, right? At the time when I was climbing the mountain, I did not realize how much the four lessons I learned could be applied to the business world. But, you know, decade later, looking back, that was probably her intent, right? She never asked for anything from anybody in her entire life. Asking me to spread her ashes was her intend to make me stronger, make me realize I was able to do things that I felt like it was impossible at the time. And then she knew, having, you know, if I can go through that process in life, I can carry that spirit forward with me and become a stronger business leader. And that's exactly the effect that on me. And then throughout I start my day in the past 15 years, I start my day by writing three thank you notes to the people that really matter to me, people who help me, including people who pass away. Grandmother always the one I thank you first every single day. And that put me in a positive mind every single day.
I love that. And that gets us to the very first decision that you write about in chapter one. You say decision number one is, it's really, why are you on this journey? And you're asking anybody who's going to start up a company or a business, you have to answer that question, don't you, while you're on this journey?
Yes. So that's a very profound way of crystallizing your strategy, right? I've had a 500 plus conversation with startup founders and leaders. I oftentimes ask them to give me three words that would describe why they started a business. And 99% of the time, they cannot answer this question the first time, right? Sometimes you have co-founders for a business, they would fight with each other because they have their own different way of thinking about why they started a business. They have all sorts of brilliant stories why they started, but putting them in three words is the most difficult thing that I find. It took me years, more than 10 years, to figure out what I want to be, right? You know, I used to have these to-do lists. Now I have a to-be list, right? I switch that to a to-be list. What do I want to be? So I finally figured out that I want to be a curious, courageous multiplier. What that means is to multiply other people's joy, knowledge, and prosperity. Right? That's what I live by, no matter what I do, and either working with a company or working, coaching an executive, whatever I do, and as long as multiply other people's joy, knowledge, and prosperity, that's aligned with my goal. Right? Same with the business owners. If you're trying to really have a business, your goal is just to make money. You're not going to go far. Right? You have to think about what kind of impact you want to make. That to be, right? What do you want this company to be? What do you want yourself to be? What do you want kind of, how do you want this company or your brand to be perceived by others? And those are important questions. And then fundamentally, you have to know why you start this journey. If you don't know why, if I did not know why I got on the journey of climbing, I was not a climber, right? I would fail miserably. Think about it. I almost lost my life through this climbing experience, and I lost everybody who went on with me. It was hard. The last mile was the most difficult part throughout that climbing experience. Same in the business. Sometimes you're like really, really close with your business, but you don't see that you're like, really out that 1 mile, the last mile to the finish line. Because we all have blind sides. Right. Blind spots. We just don't know what we don't know as a founder.
Right. I found that three words to be incredibly difficult. Right. And I wasn't sure, what you were really asking. Were you asking me to try to define my business in three words? Or is it three things that I want to be, when you asked that question, three words, and I thought it was a brilliant question. I've been thinking about it for days. Yeah. I can't get it out of my mind. Can you kind of help us, how we should think about those three words?
Sure. I think you can think about it from multiple angles, right? If it's a business, what my question is that, can you use three words to describe your business, right? What do you want this business to be? So to me, it's a three word to describe what you want your brand or business to be, or what would you like you to be perceived for, right? What do you want to leave your legacy for? It's like if we are, I've been writing my eulogy, right, in the past few years, where if you people go to the funeral, they don't talk about your job title. They don't talk about, if you're a CEO at a company, they barely talk about what they talk about, the positive impact you've made on them personally throughout your life, right? That's what really matters to people. But if you say, how do you want people to describe you or your brand, whatever, right? The legacy you leave behind, those are three words that describe you as an individual, or describe your business or brand as, whatever those three, how you want to be described or remembered as. So that would make this question easier to answer.
I love that. That's beautiful, Helen. That's so much clarity. I love it. Decision number two was interesting. You said, what problems are you solving? And you said, and here's your quote. You said, if I had to pick the most important question along your journey, this would be the winner. Why? Yes. And I don't think we understand as entrepreneurs, I don't think we spend enough time, because you really give some quotes. You said, if Sarah Doody, he was a UX designer, said, if you can't find a problem, then don't design a solution. And then Laura Javier says, fall in love with the problem, not a specific solution. And then you wrote right after that, be obsessively passionate about discovering the problem. We don't do that very well, do we?
Not at all, right? There are so many times we try to solve, myself included, try to solve a problem that was not the root cause of the problem to begin with, right? Mm. So I find myself again in the situation again and again, working with many businesses, regardless of size, where we thought that was a problem trying to solve without asking, with some certain set of assumptions, obviously with the information we collected from the people we talked to. But you first need to figure out, right, we're trying to solve a problem. What is the root cause of that problem? Who have we spoken with, right? If we solve a problem, for whom? So if you start asking all these questions, and then you first of all need to speak to the right person who is the owner for this issue you're trying to solve. Two is to understand root cause issue before you jump into to really solve the issue. Once you figure out what the problem you're trying to solve, is much easier to solve them and then solve the root cause of the issue and make it sustainable. Drive the sustainable growth.
That's beautiful. Her name is Helen Yu. Is she awesome? People out there, listen, I've got so many people from all over the world tuning in right now, CastBox FM, Jennifer, Moby, Sahar, thank you so much for listening. I've got people all over, John Hansen, Joelle, thanks for listening and watching. Hey, her book is called Ascend Your Startup. Get it. You know what? You're listening to her here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, I got two great sponsors. One is Epic Physical Therapy. If you have a physical therapist, I think that's great. You should. But I really want you to look at Epic Physical Therapy. They're my physical therapists. I'm just telling you, they will customize a treatment program designed specifically for you. When you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results, start with Epic PT. That's EPICPT.com. EPICPT.com. Go there, check them out. Also, Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. Look, here's the deal. I know there's a lot of real estate agents out there, and I know that there are people who are making all sorts of claims. I've watched all sorts of stuff on TV. Here's what I know. Linda Kraft has been doing this for more than 35 years at the very top of the pyramid. All right. She's been at the top successfully for more than 35 years. How do you do that? It's because she understands her customer and she understands her customer experience. Helen Yu is going to talk, I promise you, about how important the customer experience is, the CX. All right. And I'm telling you, Linda Kraft does that. When you want to find out about a great customer experience when it comes to real estate, go with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Helen Yu and her book, Ascend Your Startup. Oh, we've only asked a couple questions and she's blowing us out of the water already. Helen, we're going to just keep going here because the book is outstanding. Something that you did that was so clever to me was decision number 4, and it's entitled, How Will You Honor Your Brand? And this is what you said. You said, book the big conference room, gather your team, call a brand meeting. After everyone sits down, leave an empty chair. That seat is where your brand gets to sit. Wow, that's cool. And you go on to say your brand came before you started the company, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we oftentimes as a founder forget about the importance of the brand, right? If we have the brands, you know, really have a seat at a table early on, and we start paying attention. Because if you think about any startup, they start focusing on product all the time, right? Most of the founders are very, very talented. They're brilliant when it comes to building a product, but then they forget about the importance of creating the awareness for the brand. They forget about so critical to really have this, make sure that whatever that is they're doing is going to make a huge impact on others, right? And then you think about Apple, think differently, right? That, remember that commercial that came out, right? Was a runner, was a sphere. People think about that. And you think about Disney is making people happy. People can really associate those tagline, a logo, whatever that is, right? With their brand. That's what you want to do. People think about, me, I want them to think about me as the curious, courageous multiplier, right? And then you really, that's what you do for every single business. And how are you going to build a brand that really resonate with people? It has to be relevant to your audience, right? Whatever problem you're trying to solve, whomever you want to solve that, use that solution for, you want to make sure it's relevant to your target audience. You want to make sure that's also aligned with your personal passion, right? You're really, and then you want to make sure the culture and you hire the people who have shared a vision with you so that you can inspire them to be part of this business and grow that with you and scale the business with you.
You know, you bring those three words back again, because you say identify your brand identity in three words: what you do, whom you do it for, and why. And I was looking at that and I was like going, oh man, we just don't dig that deep into our brand. I think we kind of create a brand, and I think we kind of think like, you know, you talk about Apple and, you know, you talk about a Nike and you talk, right? And you talk about them. But you know what? There's been a lot of thought process, because you made the point, Nike doesn't sell shoes. You know, that's not really what they do. They don't sell merchandise. They're selling a dream. I mean, they're trying to sell an experience. They're trying to, you know, sell us. They're trying to sell us something much bigger that we connect with emotionally. And
exactly.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the thing that we miss in the startup is, I think we get so clever that we don't think about what is the emotional connection that we're going to have with our brand.
Yeah. You were right on, Jay. Think about Apple, right? When Steve Jobs came up to the stage, hand holding that iPhone, right? You know, I don't know if you know, BlackBerry came out before iPhone.
Right. Had one. I had one.
Yeah, exactly. But that did not last long. Why? Because there was no emotional connection with the users, right, or people. Yeah. And then you look at iPad is a 12th or 14th thing that's similar that came to the market. Same with Google. Google is the 14th or 12th search engine.
Right.
So you don't have to be the first to be successful, but you need to have that connection with your audience. You need to solve the problem, not only solve the problem, but connecting with your users and audience. What's that? You talk about four things, beginning of the show. I loved it, right? There's that emotional, there's a spiritual. So product alone won't really, you know, really make you stand out. There is something beyond that product.
Right.
This is why I talk about growth thrives at the intersection of humanity and technology. It has to have that intersection that connects with people, that really, really motivates them to really invest in you.
You know, it's really interesting, because when you start talking about the brand and you start thinking about that, and then you start thinking about this journey that we're on as we're trying to, you know, start our business or keep our business going or whatever it is. And here we are in and amongst, I don't know, sometimes I think people forget the emotions that we go through, because I was thinking about when I was reading the emotions that you were going through as you were, you know, going from camp and down and up and down and back and forth. You said a quote, you said, "The desire to abandon the climb happens to all of us from time to time. You look around and there were zero customers in sight. Investors won't return your phone calls. No money is coming in. You hit the wall and you're not sure how to overcome the challenge. On your worst days, you dream of working for someone else. A desk job and a place where somebody else worries about keeping the lights on." That's on page 60. Helen, did you experience that too?
Because all the time.
I feel like...
all the time. Every one of us actually going through that kind of emotions, especially when you are in a startup environment, right? As I mentioned earlier, startup is a temporary organization that you're constantly looking for repeatable and a scalable go-to-market. That makes the journey harder, but it makes the journey more exciting, right? If you're going to go to a larger organization, they have the go-to-market everything. All you need to do is focus on execution. If that's what you're looking for, then startup is not the right environment for you, right? And then people know, this is why people like to take on the ride of roller coaster, knowing the risk, but it's controllable risk, right? You take on and in exchange for the excitement you're going to experience. And startup is not different, if you think about it. And we, as human, even personal life, we all go through the ups and downs.
Yeah.
What matters the most is how we focus on what's within our control, right? As leaders, I think that we as leaders really to make what is a leader's role is making inspiring connections, connecting choices every single day, right?
Right.
That being said, that it can be challenging from time to time. You probably know this is the, you know, great years of resignation. You know, sometimes as you think you're going through really, really, you know, strides, and then you have employee, key employee who decide to leave the company, what you're going to do as a leader, right? As a leader, you have to step up and then inspire the rest of the organization to really get on, get, you know, get their buy-in on the direction we're going. And then also make sure you re-energize them and then motivate them to carry forward the journey with you. So that's a hard part, because as a leader, we can, even though we have all the emotional things, we cannot show that 100% at times.
Right.
The negative part, but the positive part, you should really, how you present yourself and showing that positive, you know, making that positive influence makes huge or significant amount of impact on others. So it's so critical as a founder and leader, or even executive at any company, regardless of the size.
Yeah, I don't want us to overlook that emotional element, because I think any of us who have started a company, or, you know, or sometimes even in the midst of it, you can be in the, you know, a long time. But I think there are times when things are just not going right, and you just get so, you know, overwhelmed, right? And a lot, you talk about this later in the book, but, you know, the truth is, it can be a very lonely place.
Yes.
Right? For people who are in startup, because you feel like everything falls back on you, and there's really no one to, who really understands. You know, there's very few people who understand what you're doing, and they really don't understand the depth of what you're trying to do. They don't understand your passion. They don't understand your why. They don't understand why you see it such a purpose. I think that's a difficult place to be in for a lot of founders, isn't it?
It is a very common place for all the founders to be in, right? I think as you scale your business, how do you know where to find the Sherpa? Right. You have to find the Sherpa as you climbing the mountain. And to me, I always network with others who have been there, done that. Right. Mm. Constantly look for the opportunity like this will connect you and me. Right. And then through this connection, you can also network with people beyond. Right. You know, every time I'm on a show or talk to people, I receive LinkedIn notes or Twitter or whatever that, and I start expanding my network. Right. And then as a founder, your job is not to be heads down to build a product day in, day out. Your job is to look after, understand why you're doing this, and build a strong brand, network with others, and then figure out who the Sherpa, you, if you have the right Sherpa. Every single stage that you go through, you need a different type of Sherpa, right? It's not like one person taking you all the way through the entire journey. Someone who can get you from $5 million to 10 may not stay as you get to the $100 million mark. So right. You have to be mentally prepared. This is about being prepared and adapt to the change that needed. Mm-hmm. As a founder, you have to separate your personal attachment, emotional personal attachment, from the business decision you're making. You know, it's so critical to become a data-driven decision maker, meaning that you have to have the data to prove your decision making, not because, hey, I grew up with Jay, he has to be on this company forever. I have to pay him forever. It has to be have a meaningful conversation. Hey, right. Jay, by the way, right, here's where we are as business. Here's the what I really need. I talk about define minimum disconnect, right, in my book. How do you define not only the minimum viable product, but the minimum viable team that I requires to carry forward your vision? And then most importantly, define the minimum viable repeatability, define the minimum viable team that can really, or culture that can carry you forward throughout the journey. And as a founder, you're lonely because you cannot share everything within the people that on this company, within the company, but you can always reach out to others outside of the company to share. And then also you can bring in people as your advisor, I advise a few startups, and then you can bring in people on the board to really share experience, and then Don't be shy about asking questions and tell people that you need some help.
Right. You've used the word Sherpa over and over again, and I don't think people understand the importance, because you had a Sherpa when you were climbing Mount Everest, right? Yeah. I think it's kind of important to, because you do relay the experience of having, I forgot his name. Was it Hassan or?
Hassan.
Yeah, right. And he was a Sherpa, and you made a real big point about going, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know if I could trust him, but boy, did I learn I could after a while. So talk about your Sherpa. Talk about the importance of your Sherpa and how that relates back to having a Sherpa in business.
Yeah, you know, when I head out for a journey, I was not a climber. I can do much better today, right? But at the time, I could not afford for a personal trainer. Most people would have done that. And at the time, internet was not pervasive like this. I had to go to library to do research. I had to call people. So I did a lot of, you know, homework, right? You know, really finding out through friends about who has done the climb. And who else can I call? I called 15 to 20 people just to ask each of them about their experience. So Hassan was referred to me by three different people, right? And then that's being said, and then I actually was able to get all of him to speak to him prior to getting on the journey. Putting costs aside, it's a costly, right? But I determined that was the best investment investment I must make, knowing that I was not a professional climber. I knew nothing about climbing. And as a US citizen, you can't just go in, you need to have permit. So he was able to really make that happen for me. He was able to hire a driver for me, right? So the good thing is the process I went through, right? I did a due diligence, and then I interviewed him over the phone, and then I had him to walk me through, if I were going to get on the journey, what should I expect? So he was able to describe that in finer details. And then he was able to describe that not only how he take on me, he talked about the other trips where he had the biggest risk. I asked him about what is the biggest anticipated risk. He really described that really, really well with me. Funny, right? You think, because he was able to share that with me, and then other people got on the trip with me, did not listen to him, did not follow the instruction. That's why some of them fall through along the way. I followed every single thing he told me to the T. When I did not know what to do, but there are also times I would challenge him in the areas that I knew better. And then he would, as long as he can explain to me why I should not be doing certain things, I'll listen to him. If you cannot explain to me why, then I would certainly follow my own gut, right? So that was a judgment I had to make along the way.
Right.
I followed almost everything when I did not know or did not ever experience certain things. So for example, on our road way to the Everest, one of the tires, we got a flat tire, right? That was the valley. When you really, there's a two-way trip. At the time, it was before Olympics. It was back in 2007. So the road was not maintained or made. So it was rough road. You got people, other cars, flat tire there. They would be there for days. But this driver, Hassan, and also super, super experienced, they had a spare. They were able to change to a spare and get us to a place. And they were able to find a place they can really get a new tire. Everything was managed without me worrying about it. He was also hold a stack of money. So as we go through certain areas where you got kids blocking the car, they won't let you go by unless you give them money. I would have no way of knowing that myself. If I were there, I would be stuck on the road, and then no way getting through areas, that risky areas. So he is super, super experienced. And then I'm like so thankful for that experience, right? If I did not hire him, I tell you, I probably would drop off the journey in the midway, right? And just wouldn't really have made it without him.
Well, I think this is interesting because you talk about Sherpas, and I have described you as I was pre-marketing the show that you're a Sherpa because you help startups, especially tech startups, guide this, and which is why you wrote this book, is because this is what you are doing. And I think it's really important because as a coach myself, I don't do what you do, but, you know, as a life coach and as a, you know, executive coach, business coach, we have to guide people. You know, we have to know where to guide them and to free, I'd say, I like to free people up so that they can be successful as they like can be because they have a potential within them. So, I mean, I think it's really, really important that they understand the power of a Sherpa is someone who really does, who does know, you know, who's been there and can help guide you through the way.
Yeah, you're right on, Jay. As a Sherpa, not only we can guide people, right, along the way, we can also see the potential in people that they may not realize that themselves, right? Especially as a coach, what you do. And Hasan, another thing I was going to tell you, we got to this, an area that says no travelers will go beyond that point. Only professional climbers can go beyond.
Yeah, only professional. I saw the plaque that said, okay, you beyond this point, you better be professional. I'm like going, Helen's not professional at this point.
No, right? So that point, Hasan said, Helen, I would lose my job if I go beyond this point with you, but you can go on if you decide to, right? So he said, I'm going to give you 3 hours, try that, you should come back. If you try it, no matter how far along you go, just, you know, really time yourself 3 hours, and then I'll wait for you here. So that's kind of a Sherpa I needed, right? They don't just follow you all the time, all along, and they tell you what they have a limit, then they encourage you to take on the journey when you need to. And so that's what I did, right? I did it without him. Part of the journey, I did it without him, but with his encouragement.
That's beautiful. Her name is Helen Yu. Isn't she awesome? She is just awesome. The book, Ascend Your Startup, you're listening to her here on A New Direction. Folks, I talk about Epic Physical Therapy. They're my physical therapist. Look, they do carry the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, the Ultra-G anti-gravity treadmill. Easy for me to say. Normatec compression sleeves, game-ready. That's just a few. They are really certified in the most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments available. Listen, when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, your epic results, go to Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's epicpt.com. And Linda Crafted Team Realtors. Listen, there's a reason why their customers love them. There's a reason why they keep coming back. There's a reason why her very first customer from 1985 still shows up at her door. The reason is because she really understands her customer. She really does. And she understands it's more than selling a house. It means something. It's because a life was made in that home. And that's why her customers call her the legend of customer service. So when you're ready to sell your home, buy a new home, regardless of where you are, start with Linda Crafted Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's lindacraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Helen Yu and Ascend Your Startup. I hope you're having a good time, Helen. Are you enjoying it?
I am, absolutely. That's having a good time. I'm having a blast here.
Good. It's got to be better than climbing Mount Everest, at least, I hope. I hope it's a little better than that, anyway. One of the things that you talk about here, and I want to kind of go, and I'm going to move on, is the issue of customers. Because in Chapter 5, you spend a lot of time talking about acclimate to the voice of the customer camp. And one of the things you compared this to was that when you were climbing Mount Everest, you can't just go straight to the summit because you'll never make it. Matter of fact, you said, I want to quote you because this is funny. And I want people to hear the quote because she's talking about this. She said, I have not showered for 10 straight days. The longest duration since immigrating to the United States. This is hard for a regimented person like me who could happily wash my hair twice a day. I've got to figure out how to get myself down. I must summon the energy to descend. This moment is not as glamorous as novels portrayed. I have diarrhea, a physical reaction for climbers enduring high altitudes. My body feels numb. My decision-making is not sharp, so I lean on my Sherpa guide, the people around me, all that I have done to prepare, and the steely grit of my grandmother. My life is now one part luck and one part determination. Wow, is that a description? And as I was thinking about you having to acclimate to the things, and then you relate it back to, you've got to acclimate to the voice of your customer.
Yeah, that was so critical, right, Jay? If you think about it, it's a profound, I would say the Mount Everest Base Camp is a profound marker, reminds us, sometimes in forward, we have to step back, right? That's being said, that no matter how great a solution you have a fantastic brand or team, you have to listen to your customer, right? Because what really matters, if you need to have customers who want to buy your product, buy your solution, so you can have a sustainable growth having a company, what that means, you have to understand them in the way that, not just in the financial way, you can understand what success looks like to your customer and what matters to the individual you're interacting with at these customers, why they invested in you in the first place. Mm. And then what are other things that's in as part of their goal, right? How can you help them to scale their business? But in order to achieve all that, what other risk you may have or competition you may have? So you have to think all these things. And I oftentimes help founders or companies I'm working with to build a customer journey mapping, right? We mm-hmm. map it out as they go through the evaluation, investment, adoption, or extension phase. What are the interaction they have, right? What is their expectation, first of all? And then what is the interaction or team member you have within our organization have to interact with them? And then what are the things that the processes you have, the tools you have, and then team member you have, where you have the gap. Mm. And then who does what I call RISI chart, right? The roles and responsibilities, who should be leading that interaction, who should be owning that relationship, who should be doing what, and then how do you hold your internal team accountable for driving toward that expected experience your customer have? That's talking about deeper dive interaction, or deeper dive review of right. your customer. Once you have that cleared up, you can have your strategy.
I want to dive into something that you said, because I think it's really important. You said this camp of acclimating to the customer is that we have to step back to move forward. Mm-hmm. And we, in order for us to acclimate to the voice of the customer to drive growth, I think we assume we mm-hmm. know our customer, but I don't think we really know the customer journey very well, do we?
No, oftentimes, right, as a startup founder, we have a tendency just to take whomever wants to do business with us. Mm. But if you really take a step back, you should ask yourself, what problem you're trying to solve? Mm. Does the solution you're offering is the right solution to solve the problem that this potential buyer may have? And then at a certain point, your growth, you just step back. If I have my customer segmentation, right, my go-to-market strategy, my customer segmentation all mapped out, and then you have to make sure that all the customers you have are truly the right fit. There are times you may want to tell the customer, be honest with them, they may not be the right fit for your solution anymore, right? Maybe early stage and trying to grow, customize your product to fit so that a customer, that they stay on the customer. But then if you're being truthful with you and with your customer, you may want to part ways, right? So that's the process you have to go through as you grow and as you further scale your business.
You say in here, By the way, this is just, you say this is probably, I think you said something like, I'm paraphrasing here, but you feel like this is one of the most critical chapters in your book, is this particular chapter, being completely obsessed with your customer, because we're nothing without them, for sure. But the one thing you say is you need to create advocates, not just customers.
Exactly.
Explain what you mean, advocates, not just customers.
So advocate are the not only these customers investing in you, they want the best outcome not only for them, but also for you. When you're trying to find the customer reference that are out there for you, they you know, sing the praise about you in public without you ask them to do so. Mm-hmm. And then they're the ones that are out there looking out for you. Sometimes they bring the business, potential business to you without you asking. Mm-hmm. So those are the situations we want to be in. The more advocates we create, the faster growth we can have as a startup. And then you think about that, if you have half of your business or customers are like that, you can grow the business much faster. And then you can also devote your time to for the sustainable growth, drive much sustainable growth by doing so.
You make a statement in this chapter and you say every customer is different. Understanding the uniqueness of that customer becomes priority one. And you say you need to ask yourself these questions. What does success look like to your customer? How do they measure that success? And is that aligned with your understanding? I think those are three powerful questions.
Thank you, Jay. And then also important to note that you have to be mindful about who you ask that question to, because the response from a CMO might be different from the response from the CIO. So oftentimes you have the sales team asking questions from a different persona, while the people like implementation team might be working with a day-to-day person. Their view of success is very different. It's important to know multiple views from different personas, so then you can take care, align them all, right, holistically. Sometimes customers don't even know they have these misalignment themselves. As us, if we can get them all aligned and then align the strategy and execution, that's where growth happens.
Decision number 13, I think, is a question that will punch everybody in the mouth, because it really got me. Because here's a question. Decision number 13 is, and everybody who's listening, you need to pay attention, because this is, you got to ask yourself this question. Is your company as customer centric as your marketing content says it is? Oh, wow. And then you go on in that little thing and you say, listen, buzzwords are left for the people who don't know how to get to the top. Oh man, Helen. I mean, because it's really a great question. Is your company as customer centric as your marketing says it is? We do all these things, put all these buzzwords in. We have all these marketing things that we think, you know, I'm number one or this, that, and the other thing. But you really have to ask it. It has to be in alignment, doesn't it? For it to really be authentic.
Absolutely. Every company says, or at least they talk about customer experience, but what really matters, you know, you need to look at what they do, right, about it. It's not about lip service. It's about accountability.
Right.
It's about alignment. So critical to really act on what you say you're going to do, walk your talk.
Yeah. Matter of fact, you talk about a culture, having a culture of accountability around the customer experience. And you say, and this is a quote from page 108, I believe remarkable customer experience happens when people rise above the expected. Wow. When you say that, you know, rising above the expected, I mean, I guess what you're saying here, right, is that we have to go way beyond what people think we should do, right? I guess it's an over-delivery. Is that what you're saying here?
Yes. As companies or leaders have the tendency to overpromise, underdeliver, right? If you see the companies who are out there, they are outstanding, they provide outstanding customer service, are the ones that really underpromise, overdeliver, right? When I say rise above expectation is when a customer, I give you an example, when a customer has someone during the pandemic, right? We had a customer that was not able to pay for the invoices. Mm. So we came up proactively knowing that they were hit really hard through the social media, through the press release. So we reached out to them. We were able to extend, have the financing term for them, right? Proactively reach out. How do we really help them through the difficult time? So that's rise above expectation. There are also other times when, you know, we have a customer who really procured more licenses that they need. You can see, right, they're not fully utilizing that. You can go to them, tell them about that, you know, the things we can maximize, shifting the investment from the licenses to something else, right? We can help them drive or fast track the adoption. So these are things are examples of how you rise above expectation. It's not about just making money, sell to the customer whatever is beneficial to you. It's about how you help them accelerate the adoption, maximize their investment, and then tell them the things that they do not necessarily even know, and to help them grow and help them scale their business faster.
I know that we're pretty much out of time here, but one of the things that you finish up with in this chapter, and by the way, folks, the book is Ascend Your Startup. You need to go get a copy. Amazon bookstores near you. It doesn't matter what your business is. You're going to get something, I promise you, out of this, because here's something that I have highlighted over and over and over again, not just in the book, I've highlighted it in my notes, and that customer experience is your leading indicator for success. We all want to define success, but Helen, I think you nailed it here. I really do. Customer experience is our leading indicator for success, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's beautiful. Her name is Helen Yu, and I told you she was going to be fantastic, and she over-delivered, didn't she? Folks, this is the show. You know what I say every week, right? You are in control of two things at all times, your attitude and your effort. And here's the deal. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are around you. You can always be in control of your attitude and effort. Take control of it now. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest, which means it's going to be another great book, which means it's going to be another great show. Thank you for joining me. And as I say to you all over the world, ciao, everybody.
Things are going to change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come. Your dreams will take you places you have never been.